This is Jay Sekulow, a showdown at the Senate on the National Emergency Declaration.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. Phone lines are open for your questions right now. Call 1-800-684-3110. That's 1-800-684-3110. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. We're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110, 800-684-3110. Big day in Washington, D.C. as it relates to the National Emergency Declaration. Let's go right to Washington. Dan Bennett, give us the latest.
Yeah, the U.S. Senate, Jay, is going to take up later this afternoon the resolution of disapproval that was passed by the House a couple of weeks ago. It's H.J. Res 46. And, Jay, there's just a couple of things I'd point out at the very outset of the broadcast. In many ways, this is an academic exercise because, remember, when the House passed this resolution, Jay, they fell 40 votes short of the votes necessary to override a presidential veto, a veto that President Trump has said is coming. And the second thing, Jay, even though I do expect this resolution to clear the simple majority hurdle of 51 votes and so technically be sent to the President of the United States, I actually think in many ways, Jay, this bolsters the argument that the president was well within his authority. And here's why. It says the resolution's all of one sentence long. I'm not going to read the whole thing, but the key portion here is it says, pursuant to Section 202 of the National Emergencies Act, the national emergency declared by the president is hereby terminated. Jay, in the very text of the resolution that the Senate is considering today, they concede the fact that several decades ago in 1976, the Congress gave the president the authority that he invoked.
Here's the way that's being postured in the press, so you know. Senate to rebuke Trump on wall. The GOP-controlled Senate, this according to The Hill, is poised to pass a Democratic resolution Thursday blocking President Trump's declaration of a national emergency to build a wall on the Mexican border. Talks within the GOP conference to avoid it, this kind of rebuke for the president collapsed Wednesday, and Mike Lee joined four other Republican senators who've already said they will not back this measure. Jordan?
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the list. I think we can kind of dive into it throughout the show because it's a mix of kind of the moderates, sometimes people call them rhinos, Republican in name only, the typical crew that votes with Democrats on anything controversial like Susan Collins and Lisa Murkowski, and then gets into some more of them kind of more moderate Republicans, I'd say, like Tom Tillis in North Carolina, Lamar Alexander, who's retiring from Tennessee, Johnny Isaacson from Georgia, Ron Johnson, Wisconsin, and Jerry Moran in Kansas. Then you've got the group, the Mike Lee, Ben Sasse, Rand Paul group. They're not so much against what the president wants to do on border security. They just don't like the idea that Congress ever gave this power to the president. So they're voting not so much against President Trump as they are against the legislation that Congress authorized. Now, what I would tell Rand Paul, Mike Lee, and Ben Sasse is that you are Congress. You authorize the president. Don't vote against him for utilizing power you gave him. Change the law if you'd like to do that. And because it is the legislature who made it very clear that the president could do it. I think there's a constitutional argument when it comes to national emergencies that the president doesn't have to have this authorized by Congress. But by authorizing it by Congress, as we all know, the Supreme Court precedent tells you that's the strongest place you can put a president when it comes to presidential power is getting direct congressional authorization along with constitutional authority.
So here's what's going to happen. If this passes, let's say 60 or more votes against the or in favor of this resolution, this law, the president says he's going to veto it, Professor Hutchinson, and to override that veto, they'd have to get to 67. They're not going to be able to get there. And they got to get two-thirds in the House as well.
You're precisely correct. And so this, in some respects, represents an empty exercise. But we should also note that the National Emergency Declaration by President Trump is an implicit condemnation of bipartisan inaction on border security and immigration reform over the past two decades.
All right, we're taking your calls. How important is this declaration of a national emergency to you? What do you think about presidential power here and control of our borders? Take all your calls and comments on this, 1-800-684-3110. What do you think about some of the Republican senators joining with their Democratic colleagues in favor of this rule, this law, that would, or this resolution, which if it became a law, the bill, would curtail the president's authority? 1-800-684-3110. We'll take your calls, reaction to all this. Don't forget the ACLJ and a Matching Talents campaign at aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Back with your calls in just a moment.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
So GOP Senators Collins, Murkowski, Tillis, Rand Paul, Mike Lee, Mitt Romney, probably Lamar Alexander, Johnny Isaacson of Georgia, Ron Johnson, Ben Sasse, and Jerry Moran are among the Republicans who could join Democrats on this legislation against, as a Democratic passed resolution blocking President Trump's declaration of a national emergency. Now, the declaration of a national emergency based on statutory grants of authority and the Constitution are the highest threshold of the president's power. So I can't imagine a court saying you didn't have the authority to do this, except maybe the Ninth Circuit. But the fact is, there's a political side to this, and that's what I want to get into. What do you think the politics of this are, Wes?
I think they're looking for future political cover. These GOP senators, had they been allowed to vote and could get back the 60-vote cloture rule, they would have voted for a border barrier. They are for that kind of border security. What they're afraid of is that if they allow this to go through, that in the future some Democrat president is going to declare a national emergency on some other controversial issue. They want to be able to say at that point, no, we voted against a GOP president and we'll vote against a Democrat president.
So let's look, what's the political calculation of what's going on here, Jordan?
I think that idea is also kind of overblown. It's that the idea is you can declare these national emergencies. The part of it that's more unique is where the funding comes from. And so what we're talking about here is when the president identified about $8 billion for a new border wall, 1.3 of that, almost 1.4, was authorized by Congress already in legislation. The only 3.5 is part of this national emergency declaration. So out of the $8 billion, we're only talking about 3.5. So it's to me, the national emergency is kind of on paper. It's then what you do with it, which is what the courts are looking at. I think it's pretty clear the president, when you've got funds that are not being utilized, and there's even statutes for those funds that say they can be used for border security, and even more specifically military funds that can be used to build barriers and walls when necessary, that during national emergencies, that you've got a lot of legislation, not just the National Emergencies Act, that support the president's action here. He didn't want to take this action. He was very clear. For months, he said, I don't want to have to do this. And finally, because of Congress's inaction, mostly on the Democrats in the House, and all that willingness, the government shutdown, he said, you know what, I'm not going to put the American security at risk because I don't like this best. I do have this option available as President of the United States, so I'm going to take it.
All right, let's go ahead and take some phone calls. 1-800-684-312. Let's go to line two.
Yeah, Kevin in Pennsylvania on line two. Kevin, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Kevin, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Good.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
Yeah, so I just wanted to, I'm a conservative, okay? I'm from Pennsylvania here, yep, in the Keystone State, and I'm a conservative. I've supported the president. Yep. I'm still a vehemently a Trump supporter. However, a lot of the debate that's kind of around this controversial issue with the wall here is that, well, first of all, I'd just like to say that I think that the whole idea of the wall, I think the reason why a lot of GOP senators don't want to vote for the wall is because, for number one, I think it's a very, very controversial issue. And I think the wall itself has been kind of pushed as a vanity project for President Trump. And a lot of people look at it as a symbol of racism, as a symbol of bigotry, and as a vanity project for President Trump. Not just liberals, okay, not just people in the inner cities, not just undocumented or recently documented Hispanics, but also suburban people and independents. So,
okay, so but we, let's focus on, yeah, I mean, I know that the we've had the arguments back and forth on whether the wall's good or bad or the politics, and I don't disagree that it is there's arguments on all sides here. But let's talk about this idea of the president exercising his power on the Declaration of National Emergency, because that's what this legislation, you had a very interesting point, and I wanted you to raise it, and that is the precedent that it would set. Go ahead and talk about that.
Yeah, so, you know, in addition to what I'm saying there, I mean, the president, do you think that we're setting a bad example? If we go ahead and say, okay, we as the GOP Congress, the GOP Senate, we're going to go ahead and support this piece of legislation. Do you see it? Do you think that it's setting a bad precedent? Because
Look, Kevin, this is the argument that the Republicans that are voting this way, that's their argument, that this sets a bad precedent. Now, let me give you some fact. Fact is, the presidents have a lot of authority under the National Emergency Declaration Act. I mean, it's just the way to fix that, if they're constitutionally concerned or statutorily concerned about that, is to change the law. They could change the law, Professor Hutchinson, to solve the problem, but that's not what they're doing here.
I think that's correct, and it's also important to note that there are something like 31 National Emergency Act declarations still in force.
Yep.
Now, I will grant you that many of those declarations are not seen as quite as controversial. But I would also argue that border security should not be controversial in 2019. The fact that it is controversial in 2019 suggests that there is a problem within our body politic. The president has a constitutional right and authority, and he even has an obligation to secure the border. We should note, parenthetically, for instance, that 50% of the illegals who cross the northern border, at least according to a recent report, are coming over from Mexico. So imagine going up to Canada to cross the northern border coming from Mexico. And that includes individuals who pose at least potentially a threat to the security of the American people. And so if indeed there is another terrorist attack, God forbid, the people of the United States will hold the president responsible for not providing sufficient security. So the president is exercising his constitutional authority, but the key issue is the failure of Congress to do its job.
Yeah, but
and it has failed
here, but
to Harry, do its job for 20 years.
For a moment. I mean, I always look at what is the, you know, whenever I start a Supreme Court case, I say, what is the other side going to argue? Whenever I do any litigation, what is the other side going to argue? And what the other side here, which includes Republicans, are going, they're going to put forward here, Fan, let me go to you on this one, and Jordan, and then we'll discuss it more. They're going to argue that this is exactly what the caller said, setting a really dangerous precedent.
Yeah, well, the first thing I would say to Kevin is that it's not setting precedent at all. It's been used 60 times before. And in fact, the specific authority, Section 2808, that the president is invoking for the funds was used 18 times by Presidents Obama and Bush. So it's not setting precedent. But, Jay, they will argue that it's bad precedent. And I think it's a valid argument to make. The trouble that I'm having, though, Jay, is I think they are confusing the two items that they're wrestling with. The first item they're wrestling with is whether or not this is an appropriate use of the president's power under the statute that they passed. Jay, I think the only Republican senator that actually has a problem with that question is Senator Rand Paul. And if he has that problem, he should be voting for this resolution of disapproval, and I think he will. Jay, the rest of the Republican senators are really wrestling with this separate question of whether or not the 1976 Act granted too much power. And if they do think that, I think they should have a conversation with Senator Lee, who has a proposal to rein some of that back in. But Jay, the only vote they're casting today, I mean, the resolution is right here. The only national emergency that this resolution addresses is the one that the president just invoked. The ones that the senators feel were an abuse of that power that were given and were too broad under the 1976 Act, this resolution does not reach to them. And the only way they can do it is passing a separate resolution. So I think both of these views can be held. And quite honestly, I agree with Jordan. I don't think this is as much politics as a policy diversion. But today's vote, Jay, it's only on the current national emergency.
But it's also,
all the other 30 that are in existence.
Nobody should kid themselves. It's going to send the political message coming out of this on every talk show is not going to be what we just talked about. It's going to be the president was rebuked.
Yeah, by a bunch of Republicans that the people don't really like.
But they were elected by
Republicans
their
who ran for, some who ran for president didn't win the nomination. He did win the nomination. So you've got some there. You've got some losing presidential candidates in there. Mitt Romney. You have Marco Rubio, who lost to President Trump in the primary. You have Ben Sasse, who's kind of been a thorn in the side of President Trump on many issues. Though he's kind of been popular amongst conservatives and Trump supporters, but certainly not an ally with the president. Then you have the group that we never can count on, the Collins and Murkowskis and the kind of in the middle, Lamar Alexanders and Johnny Isaacsons. So I think the reality is this is a president who supersedes Republican Democrat. And if this was a George W. Bush presidency, or let's imagine a Mitt Romney presidency for a moment, a much bigger deal. But it's not for Donald Trump.
Okay.
Because Donald Trump is way bigger than this group of senators.
What do you think, Wes?
Yeah, well, the fact is, Jay, there is a national emergency on the southern border.
Well, that's the part you get lost with.
Yeah,
right.
You get lost in all this conversation. There is an emergency there. And like I said, left to their own devices, some of these same Republican senators, if they could vote for the barrier on its own, they would actually do that. But it's a shame that national security, the drug trafficking, the human trafficking, all of that gets lost in this political conversation.
The president is going to veto the bill. He said that. And Fan, you're saying the House and the Senate are both short?
The House was 40 votes short, and let's say the Senate gets to 60. That's still 7 votes short of the 67 needed override. So, Jay, I agree with you that the media reaction will be, but the proper headline would be that the Senate falls 7 votes short of the votes necessary to override the president's veto.
That will not be the headline.
Agreed.
But that would be the real outrage that you're talking about, not the fake news outrage. The real outrage would be if you had a mass amount that could show right now we can override your veto. It didn't happen in the House. This is already a dead vote.
That's true.
Practically in the Senate.
House didn't get there, so even that wouldn't really matter.
Right.
All right. We got a lot to talk about on this right up to the break. 1-800-684-3110. Got a couple lines open for you. 800-684-3110. Back with more in a moment.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
So the headline is going to be the president gets a rebuke from Senate Republicans. And then the next headline will be when he vetoes that legislation is president overrides Senate Republican senators. That's how this is coming together. So let's just assume that, because that's what this is on this national emergency legislation or this bill to curtail what the president's done in his declaration of national emergency on the border. Everybody forgetting, as Wes, as you just said during the break, that there actually is a problem on the border.
Yeah, absolutely. The crisis is real. I mean, it is very real. Not only the human trafficking and the drug cartels and the national security issues, which the Democrats right now are downplaying, but the humanitarian crisis on the border. Part of what the president has asked for is humanitarian funds to help the people who are waiting on the border trying to get in. So, yeah, they are sacrificing real issues at the border and their own integrity in order to make political points, which is unfair, and it certainly is disingenuous.
All right, let's go ahead and take phone calls. 1-800-684-3110. Who's next?
Yeah, let's go to Don in California on line 4. Don, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Don.
Hi. I respectfully disagree with your last caller as well. I'm a little bit disappointed with Mike Lee and Ted Cruz. These guys realize that this is a principled war against
Ted Cruz,
a party that
let me stop you 1 second, Don, just to correct something. There's no indication that Ted Cruz is voting for this bill.
Okay.
Well, but you're right on the other. Go ahead.
But so it seems like some of these conservative members that are usually on board, it's kind of surprising because they have to realize that this is about principle. This isn't virtue signaling. This isn't about trying to take the moral high ground in order that the Democrats would get the message. They already will use this for whatever means they deem as necessary. And the Republicans have to realize by now that all the people on the border are saying this is a national emergency. What better reason do we have to put a wall up? Listen, I was against the wall before because I didn't believe, I thought through the vetting of people that we could get rid of a lot of these illegals. But I'm realizing now how desperate we are in need of this wall. And living in California, it is quite obvious how much we need this wall.
Well, what's being lost in this entire debate, Harry, is the fact that these Republicans and a lot of these Democrats would have voted for a wall as a border security item.
I think you're precisely correct. And so if we go back in time to 2006, the House of Representatives voted 283-138 in favor of the Secure Fence Act of 2006. Conceptually, that is the same idea that President Trump has offered. The United States Senate voted 80-19 in favor of the Secure Fence Act of 2006, and that vote included Chuck Schumer and most Republicans and most Democrats. And so right now what we have is a debate over President Trump's authority, which is disconnected from his power under the Constitution. So right now the debate is grounded largely in pure politics. Since President Trump supports border security, many proponents of border security in the past now oppose it. So it's pure hypocrisy. That's number one. Number two, as Wesley correctly points out, human trafficking, drug trafficking, sex trafficking, all of those things continue, and they cause problems in communities that are not located in the suburbs of Washington, D.C. They're not located in the Tony sections of Washington, D.C. Those individuals, the members of the House and the Senate, they live basically behind walls to protect them from all sorts of nefarious misconduct. And now they're telling the people in Texas, they're telling the people in New Mexico and in California and throughout the country, just live with the problem, live with the humanitarian crisis. And I think the problem with the Senate, the problem with the House in large measure, and this is a bipartisan attack on my part, is that they do not live in the real world.
Listen to this is when Secretary Nielsen, Department of Homeland Security, testified not just about the illegal immigrants coming across the southern border, but the dangerous drugs and just how dangerous they are. Take a listen.
The crisis is just not with respect to immigration. It's with respect to the drugs that are pouring across this border and that are killing our kids at a rate of 5 an hour for heroin alone. And one of the big components of that is fentanyl. And just a tiny amount of fentanyl is what's proving fatal in most of the heroin overdoses now because the fentanyl is being mixed with the heroin. Can you tell me if there's been any significant seizures of fentanyl at the border recently?
At the border, yes. In the interior as well. ICE, overall interdicted enough fentanyl last year to kill every American twice over.
That's
substantial amounts of fentanyl.
So and that's enough to kill every single American?
Twice. Yes, sir.
It's amazing.
So the reason for a national emergency has been set forth. But as I said, I know how this is going to be played. You know how it's going to be played.
Yeah, well, you're correct. I mean, first of all, I think the reality of the danger that Harry was describing and that Secretary Nielsen was describing, Jay, I think it politically it's going to hurt those who say that this is not an emergency. I do think that you're correct about the headlines that the media will put forth, but I think the American people know there is an emergency, and those who deny it will be hurt by it. But the other political factor I see here is the one that Jordan has brought up. I actually think a little Republican opposition in the House and Senate, Jay, I don't think that hurts this president. I actually think it probably bolsters his political chances. I will say this. I think there's room for policy disagreement. I actually agree with Senator Lee on some of the reforms that are out there. I think putting forward a timeline for the Congress to vote, including on some of these ridiculous national emergencies that are still existing, Jay, I think those are good ideas. But guess who has the power to move them? It's the same senators who are now expressing concern about this emergency declaration.
Yep, let's go ahead and take another call before the break.
Yep, let's go to Bernadette in New York on line 6. Bernadette, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Bernadette.
Hi, how are you
good.
All? Great conversation. You know, I think that the president himself is acting within his parameters of his political power. I mean, we voted for this man. We want the wall. He's doing everything he's supposed to. Now all of a sudden Congress acts like little babies because they can't get their way. Why didn't they vote for other reasons to stop the president or change these rules? They don't do that. President Obama used Section 2808 18 times. Nobody said a word.
Right.
I'm a doctor in New York. I see that they come into this country, they get free Medicaid immediately, money, use of our plans, and half Americans don't have medical coverage.
Look, you're laying out all the reasons why that this is the president has the authority to do this, which I believe he does, without question, statutorily, constitutionally. The issue is, what is going to be the fallout from this? Because the president will veto this legislation, and they will not be able to override that veto. So at the end of the day, when it's all said and done, guess what happens to this bill? It does not become law. Then but the headline will be, Republicans rebuke president. Now, the next day it should be, president rebukes Congress by overriding, by putting a veto in place that they cannot override. That's why our founders have that whole process laid out in the Constitution. That's why we're a republic, if you can keep it. So great questions coming in. Great questions coming by Facebook and Periscope as well as on air. We're going to be here for another 30 minutes. I can't believe 30 minutes have gone by already. You give us a call, 1-800-684-3110. That's 800-684-3110. How important is this issue to you? Especially people on the border. Love to hear from you as well, 800-684-3110. But also, don't forget, we're in a matching challenge campaign at aclj.org. We've got an email out right now on a major win against Planned Parenthood in the Sixth Circuit. We talked about it yesterday. Jordan's letting you know how you could participate.
Folks, you go to aclj.org. Right on the top of the homepage, you'll see Matching Challenge. Click there. Whatever you donate this month of March, our first Matching Challenge month of the year, is effectively doubled. We have a donor ready to match your donation. So you donate $25, that becomes $50 for the ACLJ, but all you're charged is $25. Donate today at aclj.org.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live. And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Headline in the Hill, Senate to rebuke Trump on wall. That's exactly what the headline's going to be when the legislation passes the Senate to curtail the president's declaration of a national emergency. And then within a 24-hour period, the president vetoes that legislation when he gets to his desk. It will be president sends message to the United States Senate. Now, will they have that headline? That's the question. But Jordan brought up a really important point during the break as we're talking about this national emergency vote that's happening right now. And that is when they say Republicans, you know, rebuke president, put the numbers in perspective.
Well, right now it's actually, I think, 7 that have said they'd vote this way. So it'd be 7 out of 53 Republicans. And let's say they get to that the bigger number of 12, okay, which is kind of being reported if you believe kind of everybody's comments around 12. It's 12 of 53. So it's a small group of Republican senators rebuking the president's action and specifically doing so in a way they know it won't actually impact his declaration of national emergency. So it's a vote they can take without affecting the border security, without affecting the wall being built. And it's kind of a protest vote. And it's a dozen at most is what we're thinking about right now. So it's 12 of 53. Just like in the House, it was only 13. There are only 13 Republicans who voted with the Democrats. And again, so I think that these are very small numbers. And if the issue is divisive, as they say, it's not divisive to these Republicans for the most part on wall building. To them, it's a presidential power issue, which can be addressed by Congress. They could repeal or change the 1976 National Emergencies Act. I still believe they could do all they want with that, and the president can make this declaration.
I think so.
There's other statutes at play here, too.
Yeah, there are other statutes at play. All right, let's go ahead and take Bill's call.
Yep, Bill calling in from Wyoming, online 5. Bill, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hi, Bill.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. First of all, let me tell you that when I'm off this phone call, I'm taking what few pennies I've saved and mailing it to you.
We appreciate that. Thank you very much.
Oh, I
very
appreciate
kind.
Your work.
Thank you.
I've got a... let me put this to the whole panel.
Okay.
It seems to me that what they should have done was that they should have sided with the president in the first place, so that we wouldn't have gotten this far with this messy discussion to begin with. Am I right or am I wrong?
Well, no, I think you raised, Harry, I think it's a really good point that Bill raises.
I think it's a very good point.
Because we're losing in all of this that the whole problem with what's going on in the actual national emergency at the wall. At the southern border, rather.
So I think the caller is perfectly correct. Essentially, the national emergency declaration by President Trump represents a bipartisan failure by both Republicans and Democrats over the years. And it's important to note that historically, securing the border was a bipartisan issue. It enjoyed bipartisan support. But since President Trump became president, you have now seen a lot of irrational opposition against policies that were formerly seen as bipartisan in nature.
But because the president's Donald Trump, everything changes.
So
the rules change.
Apparently, many senators, many members of the House, largely on the Democratic side, are prepared to allow more and more fentanyl into the United States.
That's
more
a good way of saying it.
Drug trafficking, more and more sex trafficking. It's also important to note they're prepared to ignore the humanitarian crisis that's on our border. In other words, we should look at the fact that approximately a third of the females who are traveling up from Central America are sexually assaulted. So where is their concern? Apparently, it's non-existent so long as they can strike a blow against President Trump.
Yeah, I mean, I think this is a time, folks, where President Trump's supporters are really going to – you're going to see a lot of fake news headlines about Republicans rebuking the president. And what they're not going to do until the small print is that it's a handful. A small handful of the Republican majority, and not enough to override truly the president's power here, which would be a real rebuke if it was a veto-proof majority. They're not going to get there. They're not even close to getting there. And they already failed to do that in the House. So, again, read through the fake news. Remember our matching challenge right now. It's the first matching challenge month of the year. Double the impact of your donation. Whatever you donate is matched. That's at aclj.org, a great time to donate today.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our Matching Challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org. Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift.
Gene on Facebook says, what is in the best interest of the United States? Implementation of comprehensive immigration reform? Fully funded border wall? Secure all points of entry in entirety? It's not that hard. I think you're 100% correct, Gene. That is a great comment. And that's, by the way, the position of the American Center for Law and Justice. We want, number one, we want comprehensive immigration reform. Now, and that could include a pathway to citizenship or work visas or whatever it might be. Fully funded building of the wall for border security and secure all points of entry in its entirety. It is not that hard. And as Wes said during the break, and this was the irony of all this, because we had another question came in on Facebook, what if the president wasn't President Trump and it was someone else? And you pointed out, Wes, that Chuck Schumer sponsored legislation for $30 billion for a wall.
They are quibbling over border security, saying there is not an emergency when they know in their hearts and in their minds it is. Chuck Schumer in 2013, when President Obama was president, introduced a bill for border security that was $30 billion. It passed the Senate, by the way, overwhelmingly, failed in the House. They refused to bring it up. And yet he wants to quibble over $8 billion. But here's the deal. In the age of President Trump, we cannot expect fair coverage in the media or for the opposition party to do what's in the best interest of the nation if they can make a political point by not doing that. Yeah. And in fact, for a generation, we have failed to reform our immigration laws and, you know, we have failed to really secure the border for the most part. The hypocrisy and the duplicity in this, Jay, because it's simply President Trump, is so glaring and it is unfair to the American people.
Pretty unbelievable. All right, we're taking your calls, 1-800-684-3110. Let's go back to the phones, Jordan.
Yep, to the phones we go. Thomas in Georgia, on line three. Thomas, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Hey, Thomas.
Greetings. Thanks for having me on the air.
Sure.
So what I wanted to share, first of all, as a Christian of 31 years, a federal agent of 10 and a half years, and as a soldier for 27 years, I completely 100% support Donald Trump in invoking executive action for this the emergency down at the border. My frustration is with the politicians. They prey on the ignorance of the American people, knowing good and well that many of them won't take the time to do the homework to figure out what's really at stake here. And so they use inflammatory verbiage to scare the American people into thinking one thing, when in reality, the complete opposite is true. And so it's really just a ploy to get them thinking. What's really dangerous is what's going on down in our border.
This is what's getting lost in the entire matter. Now, the head of the Customs and Border Protection Commissioner testified about a week ago on Capitol Hill, take a listen to what he said about actually what's taking place down there.
76,000 total apprehensions and inadmissible arrivals in a four-week month in February. That's the highest number of encounters in any February in the last 12 years. We have apprehended and encountered more families in just 5 months and 5 days than last year's record total. The system is well beyond capacity and remains at a breaking point.
Well, there you have it. So that's what's getting lost, Fan, in all of this. Like, it doesn't exist.
Addressed. I think Thomas is correct that there are a lot of politicians in Washington, D.C. who think that it will help them if they oppose the president on this. Jay, I think all you have to do is look at the President Trump's last campaign to understand that that's very likely to backfire on them. I think the American people are way ahead of Washington, D.C. on this. I think the American people of all stripes, Jay, know that this is an emergency, know that it has to be addressed. And the politicians in Washington, D.C., they're going to stake their claim on this. And Jay, I think those who don't address it as an emergency, I think they're likely to pay a price.
All right, let's go right back to the phones. Jacob in California on line 2. Jacob, welcome to JSecure Live.
Hi, Jacob. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, y'all. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I guess I've got a lot on my mind, but just listening to y'all now is, first, I think that everyone kind of does have this Trump derangement syndrome where It doesn't matter if you saved your baby from a fire. They would figure out a way to say he was a bad person, you know? But I moved here to California from Mobile, Alabama. I used to think that the borders 2 years ago, I sat on the couch laughing about Donald Trump becoming president and about the border wall, how I need to build this wall. And then I get out to California and I see a whole new perspective from
what in California changed your perspective?
You know, the drug problems here, man, it's crazy. There's drug problems back home, don't get me wrong. But I've had three of my friends die of drug overdoses back home. But the amount of drugs, heroin,
so the flowing of drugs, the heroin, fentanyl, the sex trafficking, Harry, all of those are the reasons for a border security. But what this is dealing with is whether the president has the authority to declare a national emergency based on a statutory grant of authority. That's what's really at issue here.
I think that's correct. In addition to which, of course, the president has constitutional authority to secure the border. But the opposition, in large measure, is simply being held captive to their donors, to their political base, to their political action committee. And they're prepared to ignore the very real crisis that we confront. And so it's very nice to have a kind of impartial discussion of the president's national emergency power. And we believe that constitutionally and statutorily he has the power. But the reality is that we should face the crisis in the lived lives of the American people. And in other words, we should force these politicians to walk in the shoes of the people in California, the people in Tennessee. In the state of Tennessee, for instance, there is a huge drug crisis there in the Ohio Valley. But apparently, the individuals in Washington, D.C., and this is a bipartisan affliction, they are prepared to ignore the reality right before their own eyes.
So let me ask Stan and Jordan this. So for politically, after this vote, what do things look like? How does it play? What does it look like politically?
Well, I think on the Democrat side of the aisle, they're left pretty much where they started, just opposing the president at all costs. I think it breaks down into a couple of different camps on the Republican side of the aisle. I think for someone like Rand Paul, whose claim is mainly that the president should not have this power, I think he's going to have to answer to the people of Kentucky on why he viewed today's vote as a repudiation of that authority, when all that today's vote is a termination of the current authority. Jay, for the second group, the group that's going to be somewhere between 5 and 10 or 12 that that join Rand Paul in voting to terminate this resolution. Jay, I think that's going to be a sticky one for them to handle back home, especially in a place like Texas. If Senator Cruz were to join this group, which he has not declared his intent yet, I think that would be a very difficult political case for him to make. Now, granted, he did just get reelected, so he won't have to go before the voters for some time. But I got to tell you, on the Republican side of the aisle, I think those who vote for this resolution of disapproval will be surprised how long the voters' memory is on it.
All right, Jordan, I want the political aspect of this. What does it look like after this vote, after the veto?
I think that the reality is that the Trump supporters have gotten what they wanted out of President Trump. He's building the wall. He's using every means necessary, legally, under the law. The Democrats will try to spin it as some kind of rebuke. A real rebuke would have been a veto-proof majority. You need a lot more than a dozen Republicans to do that in the Senate. They already failed to do it in the House. This is just a vote for vote's sake. And unfortunately, I think all these Republicans are playing into a Democrat trap, to be honest with you.
You think that?
Yes, they're just playing into the media narrative of so they can write the article like you're saying it's a rebuke, even though a real rebuke is when you pass something with a veto-proof majority that the president can't stop Congress from doing. And that's not the case here. They already failed. In fact, the Senate could have decided we didn't want to do this vote because the House already failed.
All right, let's Wes, what do you think about that? I'm going to grab a call here before the break.
Sometimes our GOP members of Congress, they're their own worst enemy. The Democrats, say what you will about them, they are always in lockstep. They do not defect. And I think it's really a sad commentary on the GOP that with a Republican in the White House that they are taking this vote, some of them, the way they will vote, even though they know it's veto-proof. It's not veto-proof, and so it's the laws. The Emergency Act is going to happen anyway,
right?
And they're still taking a stand as a group of Republicans against the president, and that's a sad commentary on the GOP.
I think that's the takeaway here. That is what is going to be played out afterwards, Professor Hutchinson. I think that's the way it's going to be played out. No matter that it's only 12
right.
out of 54, 53, that's the way it's still going to be played.
Wesley's analysis is spot on. Too many Republicans fail to take the long-term view when it comes to policy, principle, and politics. Democrats often take a long-term view. They often are much more cohesive. They're less fragmented. And so one of the takeaways is that the Republicans who vote against this emergency declaration are actually weakening themselves.
All right, we're taking a break. We come back last segment. Phone lines are jammed. We'll try to get to some of your Facebook comments during the break here. We'll take your calls at 1-800-684-3110. We've got an email out about this win at the Sixth Circuit Court of Appeals against Planned Parenthood. We had a win last week in New York. We had a win on the life issue. That was a life issue as well. We had a win in Maryland last week, and then this week we opened up with the Sixth Circuit victory. So a good week, good really 2 weeks here on the issue of life. So your support of the ACLJ is critical. We're in a matching challenge campaign. Jordan's going to let you know how you participate.
Folks, you go to ACLJ.org right now. That's ACLJ.org. And on the top of the homepage, you'll see the matching challenge banner. Click on that. Whatever you donate is doubled. You can double the impact of your donation. $25 becomes $50 for the ACLJ. On up from there and down below to ACLJ.org.
Only when a society can agree that the most vulnerable and voiceless deserve to be protected is there any hope for that culture to survive. And that's exactly what you are saying when you stand with the American Center for Law and Justice to defend the right to life. We've created a free, powerful publication offering a panoramic view of the ACLJ's battle for the unborn. It's called Mission Life. It will show you how you are personally impacting the pro-life battle through your support. And the publication includes a look at all major ACLJ pro-life cases, how we're fighting for the rights of pro-life activists, the ramifications of Roe v. Wade 40 years later, Planned Parenthood's role in the abortion industry, and what Obamacare means to the pro-life movement. Discover the many ways your membership with the ACLJ is empowering the right to life. Request your free copy of Mission Life today online at aclj.org/gift. At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. Whether it's defending religious freedom, protecting those who are persecuted for their faith, uncovering corruption in the Washington bureaucracy, and fighting to protect life in the courts and in Congress, the ACLJ would not be able to do any of this without your support. For that, we are grateful. Now there's an opportunity for you to help in a unique way. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. This is a critical time for the ACLJ. The work we do simply would not occur without your generous support. Take part in our matching challenge today. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.
Lisa on Facebook said this: Congress no longer protects our country, votes to protect our country because they hate the president. That's the real emergency. That's one of our comments coming in from Lisa. All right, we're taking your calls. 1-800-684-3110. Last segment of the broadcast. You want to go in the order they held? I think that's the best bet. Okay.
That's the best way to do it. Bill in Virginia, on line one. Bill, welcome to Jay Sekulow Live.
Go ahead, Bill.
How are you, gentlemen?
Good.
I just wanted to say that the argument is being made that this is a dangerous precedent, namely because if you had a Democrat come in there, they could come in and they could, oh my gosh, declare a gun emergency or environmental emergency. Now, I don't think this is a very strong argument at all, and I think it's a fear tactic because, okay, even if you put a put away Second Amendment concerns, you're talking about, now you're talking about private property versus public funding, for example, with building the wall. And I think Truman tried to steel mills, I guess, in
didn't work out so well.
And the reports were like, no, they slapped that down because it's a private property. And I think in a way it's a win-win because if later on they do try to do that, I mean, I couldn't imagine what a disaster that would be.
What do you think about that, Professor Hutchinson?
Well, I think the caller raises a very, very good point. And so one of the issues that's out there, of course, is that many people conflate history, past history, with this particular national emergency declaration. So the quintessential question remains whether or not the national emergency declaration by President Trump is grounded both in the Constitution and in the statutory language which Congress has provided him with. And I think the answer is yes. And so if we go back to the Youngstown Steel case, President Truman essentially took private property.
Right.
And that was a clear and unmistakable violation of the Constitution. And so the president of the United States, President Trump, is not taking private property. He is not taking gun rights away from the American people in violation of the Second Amendment as interpreted by the United States Supreme Court. So I think the issue that's on the table is whether or not President Trump is exercising the emergency declaration consistent with statutory authority, which Congress has already given him.
And if Congress wanted to take it away, they could take it away. But
absolutely,
that's not what they're doing. All right, go back to the phones.
Nancy in California, line four. Nancy, welcome to JSEC.
Hi, Nancy. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi there. So I'm kind of confused. When they were talking about giving monies and stuff, I think at one point they offered like $1.5 billion or whatever,
right,
and then the White House was able to kind of shuffle money around and get it up to a little over $5 billion. Are they trying to stop that from happening, or are they trying to just change basically the title of national emergency?
So there's a lot of other statutes that were at play that allowed the president to utilize what he pulled together about $8 billion. 1.4 of that was directly authorized by Congress. Other amounts come through other statutes that have nothing to do with the national emergency, discretionary funds, funds that aren't being used. What is at issue here, through the National Emergency Declaration, the money dollar amount is $3.5 billion. That's it, out of the $8 billion. So that's all they're voting, trying to prevent the president from being able to utilize, is $3.5 of the $8 billion. Not all of the money, and not to stop all of the wall funding or to stop any kind of construction of border security. It is specific to the $3.5 billion related to the National Emergency Declaration. There's another almost $5 billion that's unrelated that the Office of Management and Budget that operates in the White House has already recognized could be utilized by the president.
All right, let's go ahead and take another phone call, 1-800-684-3110.
Sonia in Maryland on line five. Sonia, welcome to JSEC.
Go ahead, you're on.
Hey, thank you so much for all you do. I wanted to say, you know, my financial resources are not like huge, so I always pick the matching challenge time to give because
thanks,
I feel like my money goes further.
Well, it does. So that's great. Thank you very much.
Thank you to the person who's matching. Yeah, thank you to the person or people who are matching my gift.
They may well be listening right now. So that's
great. That's what I'm hoping. That's why I'm saying thanks.
All right.
So, you know, first of all, when you just played that soundbite about enough illegal fentanyl coming in to kill us all two times over, my stomach hurts.
Yeah.
Just hearing it, like, holy cow, build the stupid wall and stop that flow of drugs. That in Maryland, we have signs all over that say how many heroin overdoses
right.
happened today, and it's terrifying.
Wait, look, it's the drug overdose, Stan. It's the sex trafficking. It's the migration patterns. It's all of the above. But everybody's losing sight of that as we debate the issue that the president has authority when he clearly has the authority. This is a political show right here, including Republicans that are doing it.
Yeah, try telling the families of those victims of overdose that there's not a national emergency. It's not going to fly. And frankly, Jay, every politician in Washington, D.C. knows it. They've gone back and forth on their votes based on the politics of the day. They know it's an emergency. The only question is, will they do anything about it?
Yeah, and the answer is they probably won't. I mean, this is the great dilemma, Wes, and all of this is that they don't. We'll get to calling them in a minute, but go ahead.
Yeah. And here's at the end of the day, this national emergency will stand. The money will be allocated according to the president's direction. And the reason the national emergency will stand, because in fact, in reality, there is a national emergency on the southern border. The president is not only well within his authority statutorily and constitutionally, but in fact, it's also based in reality. And so people who are really not just politically motivated would have to admit, and in the past, Democrats have admitted, that we have a crisis on the border that definitely needs to be addressed.
All right, let's go ahead and take another call, Jordan. I think we get the last two.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Doug in Missouri, line two. Doug, welcome to JSEC Hill Live.
Hey, Doug.
Thanks for taking the call.
Sure.
My question, let's say it's signed. Everything is there.
Yeah.
What happens tomorrow? My question, what happens tomorrow as it relates to the impact that it will have on the concerns that are being expressed?
So the wall construction is underway. There are portions of the wall, Jordan, underway right now.
Yeah, that's right. It's already underway. There was already a wall that was being redone that was old and kind of rusted and pressed away. Already allocated, and there's new wall being built right now. All at issue here is the 3.5 out of 8 billion that's already been notified. And if you've seen some of the recent images of how quickly they can put this wall up, it's actually pretty impressive how quick this can go up. So again, I think that it's a year's program in total, but they're going to be able to utilize the $8 billion, and that's what's important. Let's take the final call. Jamie in New Mexico on line three. Jamie, last call of the day.
Go ahead, Jamie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. My comment is just that I feel like what you said, they're losing sight of what's really going on the border, is true. And the Central Americans are not going to stop coming, and how can we get them to act to change the immigration laws? Until they're changed, they're not going to stop coming.
I think that's right. So what we've advocated is comprehensive immigration reform, so that people that are here illegally already, that are been here for years, and their children, 20 million or so, figure out how to handle that either with work visas or green cards or eventually a pathway to citizenship. You got to then put border security in place. And like every other country in the civilized world, you want to know who's coming in your country. You want to know what they can offer the country. If they need asylum, we have programs for asylum. So we have the best laws in the world, most compassionate. But what we have to do is have a system that works. And right now, Stan Bennett, it does not.
It does not. The White House put a proposal on the table to address all of those issues. It was rejected. But, Jay, I'll tell you what moves that conversation forward. If we actually get a grip and a handle on our border, if the people are convinced it's secure, I think the conversation about comprehensive immigration reform, Jay, it has helped. It has moved forward.
Folks, this is the time to support the work of the American Center for Law and Justice, our matching challenge month. First one of 2019 is this month of March. What that means is whatever you donate is matched. It's doubled. So anything from a $5 donation to a $100 donation, everything in between is matched by a donor and on up from there. So if you donate $35 to the ACLJ, we have a donor ready to match that. You make the initial donation, that's what you're charging your credit card at ACLJ.org. They match it with another $35, that's $70 for ACLJ.
At the American Center for Law and Justice, we're engaged in critical issues at home and abroad. For a limited time, you can participate in the ACLJ's Matching Challenge. For every dollar you donate, it will be matched. A $10 gift becomes $20. A $50 gift becomes $100. You can make a difference in the work we do, protecting the constitutional and religious freedoms that are most important to you and your family. Give a gift today online at aclj.org.